Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of Money Tree Investing Podcast. We're happy to have you joining us for this exciting show today. My name is Kirk Chisholm and I'm going to be your host. So we're going to be talking about real estate and the investing mindset with Stephen Pezzavento. I'm really excited to dig into some of his secrets, which, you know, he and I have been talking a little bit on his show as well, and I think you're really going to enjoy the show. But before we start, are you looking for a better way to invest during market turmoil? Consider Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor that uses time-tested principles of modern portfolio theory to help you manage your wealth and reach your financial goals. With Betterment, you don't have to worry about what the market's doing on a day-to-day basis. Instead, Betterment allows you to use the stock market to consistently build wealth. For more information, visit moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. A lot of investors use Betterment, but it doesn't mean it's the right fit for you. Do your own research. Check out moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment to see if Betterment is the right fit for you. So Steve, how's it going today?
It is going fantastic. Really excited to be here with you today, Kirk.
Great. Well, I'm really excited to have you on the show and I'm really excited for the listeners to hear what you have to say. I was on your show a little bit earlier and we talked a lot about mindset. And I think, you know, mindset is one of those really important topics that people don't talk about. They just assume it just happens. And it's probably one of the more impactful things, at least from my perspective in my career. But Steve, why don't we start by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the host of the Investor Mindset podcast, which if you haven't listened, I would definitely recommend it. Go check it out on your favorite podcast app. But I started in the real estate investing game about 3 years ago, built a very successful real estate wholesaling and house flipping business out of state, remote, was living in Southern California at the time, and started investing out in Raleigh, North Carolina. So we've bought and flipped over 180 properties in the last 2.5 years, and we've grown tremendously. But one of the keys to our success was we really built an amazing team. And when I say me, I mean, my team of awesome salespeople and marketers. And what we do is we go after finding houses directly off market. So we go and find people who are looking to sell and we buy the house directly to them, essentially cutting out the real estate broker and giving us an opportunity to really build some wealth by, you know, renovating and fixing up those houses.
So you're based in Southern California and you're buying property in North Carolina. How does that work?
Yeah, well, I was based in Southern California. I live in Denver now, which is one of the benefits of building a remote real estate business, as I was able to move out here. But, you know, the way it works is just like so many other businesses. What we do is, you know, we'll do huge marketing drops and go and find people who are looking to sell their house. And our sales team, which is all based out of North Carolina on the grounds out there or in Minnesota, one of our other markets, you know, they'll go and meet with those people face to face. And because we've built a team, because we've built a business, I don't need to be there for it to operate every day. Thank goodness for the internet and tools like Zoom and Slack, we're able to interact and connect with each other and, you know, analyze these different investment opportunities and see which one's the best for us or for our clients that we might end up turning around and selling it.
You talked a little bit about having a team. I mean, obviously, to do what you have to do, you know, you obviously need people on the ground. How did you evolve from having no real estate to having a lot of properties? How did that progression go from like the very start where you had nothing and no team to where you are today?
So if I look all the way back, I always had this dream of wanting to either be a chef like Emeril Lagasse or to renovate houses like Bob Vila. And I tried my my cooking skills and I loved it, but it wasn't something I wanted to build a career on. So I finally took the leap. And it was one of those ideas that I just couldn't get out of my head. It was something I kept thinking about. I kept coming up with all these reasons why I shouldn't do it, all these limiting beliefs. I'm not old enough. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough experience. Really, everything that you could possibly think of was running through my head. And so finally, I just had this realization that I just need to do it. And I made it a must. And once I decided that I was going to jump in with both feet, I didn't look back. You know, I burned the boats. I fired all of my clients at the time. I was running a web development company, worked in, you know, the tech space for quite a while and management consulting before that. But for me, I am the kind of person who has to go all in when he does something. And so what I did was I, you know, jumped in with both feet and I went out and I found other people who were doing what I wanted to do. And I went and found examples of how they had hit success. And I just tried to find a way to get close to them. I would go to different real estate events, different meetups, different groups, different masterminds, and try to find other people who are already walking the path that I wanted to walk, and to figure out, well, hey, if I just do exactly what they did, then I might get a similar result. And fortunately for me, you know, a year into my real estate career, I had bought and sold 75 houses that first year. And we really did that because I was able to go out and find the right people to kind of help us on that journey. And so when it comes to building a team, it's one of those things you have to really just start doing. You know, you're not going to, the first person you hire, probably not going to be the best person. But every time you hire somebody and you fire them, you learn a lot about what is the right fit for that role. And you are kind of growing as a leader, as well as they're growing as a team member. And things just kind of evolved over the last 3 years to kind of where we're at right now.
Nice. And you actually made some really interesting points that I want to touch on. So you were talking about limiting beliefs. What were some of your limiting beliefs? Because I know there are a lot of investors out there that they might not realize it, but there are limiting beliefs for all of us. What were some of yours and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, I mean, I had so many and I still have so many. There are those things that kind of pop up, those little thoughts in your head that says, oh, that's not possible, or you couldn't do that. That happens all the time. But for me, the big one was, you're not old enough, or you don't have enough experience, or you don't have enough money. And they really did hold me back for a long time because you're never going to have the right experience. You're never going to have enough money if it's something that's so undefined, because they'll just shift. You know, they'll just morph into a different limiting belief that'll hold you back, because really all they are is just an excuse of why something can't be done. But fortunately, I took a look around and I found some other people who were young or who were unexperienced or who didn't have any money. And I looked at them and I thought, okay, well, shoot, if they can go out and do this, then I can definitely do it. And I had a couple of mentors who I looked at and I was like, you know what? They're not special. You know, they're not that smart. They're not that skilled. They just went and took some action. And so then I just kind of jumped right in alongside them and started kind of modeling their business.
That's really interesting perspective, because when you're modeling after somebody and you realize like they're just people too, like they're not superheroes, they're not perfect.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a minute, this person's not that smart and they're doing it. Why can't I do it? But it's really scary.
Exactly.
It's scary to take that leap.
It's scary because we don't want to fail, and we don't want to fail because we want to be loved. You know, we want other people to look up to us. We want people to care about us. We want to have a little bit of security in our life. But the fact that it's scary is exactly why we should do it, because it won't be scary if you know what the heck you're doing. But you're not going to be able to learn how to do that thing until you jump in and actually get some experience. So usually for me, when I think of something and I'm like, that's scary, I try to trigger myself to remember, okay, well, hey, that's something I should look into a little bit more. Maybe that's something that I should actually do. That's a challenge that I need to take.
Yeah. And I know there's different ways to overcome these fears, but you know, what are some of the ways that you found were effective for you?
I think there's so many different ways. Obviously, I talked a little bit about modeling, finding an example of someone else who's jumped off the cliff or done what you want to do. And then you realize, okay, well, it's not as scary, because if they can go and do it, then I can definitely figure out a way to do it. For me, another thing is I try to be very intentional, to have really clear vision of what I want to do and why I want it. If I'm able to get down to the core of what's driving me, down to that purpose, and I'm able to tie something that I want to achieve, you know, one of those waypoints on the journey towards my end goal, which is always moving, it's always changing. If I'm able to tie something into that purpose, then it actually gets pretty easy, because even if it is scary, there's such a strong drive because I've made that purpose my must. It's not something that's an option. It's something I have to do. And so I don't think about it. If I take myself out of the thinking about, well, why can't I succeed with this, or why it's not going to work out, if I don't have those thoughts, then it doesn't bog me down. But the other big takeaway is, like, I just recognize that so many other people have the same feeling. You know, it makes you feel comforted inside to know that you're not special. You're not unique in the fact that you're having that feeling. It's a feeling that so many other people have had. If you use it in the right way, I usually just move right on past it.
And I think each one of us kind of approach things differently. You mentioned about, you know, burning your boats as you come in, which I think is is a good way to describe it. That's kind of how I think about it too. You just throw all caution to the wind and just do it. And I think for each one of us, we're wired differently in terms of our ability to do stuff like that.
Yeah, and frankly, that's not going to be the right thing for everybody. Some people are like, holy smoke, Steven, what are you talking about? I can't just quit my job. I have all these things, all these responsibilities. And that's actually going to drive them down the wrong path. It's going to lead them into this level of anxiety and this despair that it's not going to be a motivator. But for me, by burning the boats, I knew there was no way that I was not going to succeed because I was going to find a way because I had no other option. And so for me, that was a driver. And so you have to really get to know yourself. You have to kind of find that time to be able to dig into what is your driving factors and how can you use those to do what you want.
Yeah. And real estate is a little bit different from other businesses in that it's like capital intensive. I don't want to say it's risky because that'll come off wrong, but the risks are different than they are for other businesses. So how did you come to grips with that? Because I know for some people, they say, well, I got to have a lot of money to do this, or I need to have good credit, or I don't want to go bankrupt or foreclosure caused to me because I messed up. What do you tell people who are thinking of it from that perspective?
I think that's powerful. And one of the reasons I think that is so important is the whole reason we rolled out the Investor Mindset podcast and why we're interviewing and talking with some of the best real estate investors and entrepreneurs out there is so that we can get into the mindset of how people think about this. And one of the things I learned through talking to some friends and mentors and other investors that were doing this is that they had a different mindset about money. They had a different mindset about how to think about where this capital is going to come from. Because, you know, like I said, that was a limiting belief. I didn't have any money when I started in this space. What I ended up learning and what I now know is that finding a really good investment deal, finding something that somebody can get a great return on is actually really valuable. And that there are other people who work really hard in their job, in their career, in their passion, and they make a lot of money. And they're looking for a place where they can get some yield, where they can get some benefit, and frankly, where they can participate in an industry that's pretty sexy. It's pretty fun. Real estate is one of those careers where you walk into a room and people are excited to talk to you. Wow, you flip houses. What's that like? Is it like HGTV? You know, and you start having these conversations with people who they've got the money and they frankly don't necessarily have the best place to put it. And so that was one of the big realizations about changing my view of what I'm actually offering. I'm not asking for money. I'm actually offering a really great opportunity for somebody else to participate. And once I was able to change that, it kind of changed my whole business because, you know, we were only able to buy and eventually flip all of those properties because we had so many great partners, people who invested with us or people who lent us money at a fairly high interest rate. They got a return and we were able to turn around and deliver some value for somebody else along the way. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. I like the way that you approach this. You'd mentioned about finding mentors or modeling other people. I know that sounds good on the surface, but maybe you can talk a little bit about how somebody could actually do that. Because I actually think about it the same way, but I know that for some people, they look at it and say, I don't understand. How do I find the right mentor? Or how do I model somebody in the right way that I should be modeling them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the most important question. And I think the thing is, a lot of people, what they're saying to themselves, even right now, as I'm answering this question is, oh, well, you know, it's lucky for you, you're able to find those people, or maybe you had some relationships or some connections. But frankly, these people are everywhere. If you're listening to this podcast, you got two models right in front of you.
I wouldn't call myself a model, Steve. I'm not that sexy.
You wouldn't call yourself a model or a coach or a leader. But in truth and reality is we're out here doing something of value and living a life that somebody else can look at and say, hey, you know what? If they can do it, I can do it. And so some of my first models and mentors, you know, outside of family and a number of people that I met growing up was listening to podcasts just like this. You know, the Tim Ferriss podcast made a big impact on my life. Listening to content from Tony Robbins, huge impact. And what you're saying to yourself is, well, those people aren't mentors. You don't get a chance to talk to them. But frankly, by listening to those people, by consuming and engaging with their content, you have a chance to really get inside their head on a much deeper level than even people who are spending time with them on a regular basis in person, because people are opening up, they're sharing. you know, on these different channels, even like right here. And so, you know, that's where the journey started for me. But then the other place that was really beneficial was going out and finding other groups of people who are doing what I wanted to do. So if we're talking about real estate investing, there's a ton of different local meetups. There's different events that go on a regular basis in your city. And frankly, I travel around the country a couple times a month going to different mastermind events and conferences and connecting with other people who are, heck, at a level much higher than I am. And so I'm able to challenge myself just by being able to interact with them. Most of the people wouldn't call themselves mentors. I wouldn't frankly call them a mentor to their face, but you know, each time you interact with somebody and you're able to learn something, in a way they're mentoring. And so you can find that right in your own backyard, or you know, jump on a plane and fly to a cool city near you.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you mentioned a few. I mean, Tim Ferriss and Tony Robbins, and I'm sure people have been alive as long as we have, probably have listened to some of their stuff over the years. I enjoy both of them for different reasons. I mean, Tim just deconstructs world-class people, which I think is phenomenal in how he does it. No one else I've seen do it like that. And Tony Robbins just, I mean, he's Tony Robbins. What do you need to really say about that? But, yeah. You know, in terms of modeling others, and this comes up, right? So there are people like, let's say a Tony Robbins, who's got his faults like we all do, and certainly has a lot of strengths. Modeling somebody, I mean, you can look at, when you look at somebody, you're going to look for, how shall I put this? You're going to look for the behavior that you're looking for, but you may miss other things. So, you know, I don't know if you have kind of an opinion on this, but how do you go about that? Like a guy like Tony Robbins, you listen to maybe him speak and like, you're going to miss 90% of it the first time. Do you like go back and listen to him again? Or are you looking for something specifically when you listen to certain things? Or how do you go about that?
I think a couple things here. One, when you model somebody or you're learning from somebody or they're on your personal board of directors, you don't have to listen to everything they say. You can tailor it to a part of your life where that person's living the vision of the kind of life you want to live, you know, whether that's relationship or a business or peak performance or whatever it is. But on the other note, what I like to do is I'm a big believer that repetition is the mother of skill, which means I like to listen to things over and over again. I'm an auditory learner and visual. So when I find a really great audiobook or podcast, I'm typically going to listen to that multiple times, especially if I feel like I get something out of it the first time. The second time I hear it, it's even better. So I do think repetition is key. But then you have to know, this goes back to kind of your own vision and what it is that you're looking to get out of that. If you know what you're looking for and you're listening, you're able to hear when, oh, hey, this might apply to me. So a good example is, you know, if you want to learn to be a real estate investor and you want to kind of go out and do this and you found some models that are succeeding in that space, and you're probably asking yourself, well, how do I do what they're doing? Or what's the first step that I need to take? Or how should I think about investing in general? Or how should I think about doing this specific task? And so when you have those questions in the back of your mind and you're listening to somebody else, you're going to hear when they answer that question. Now, if you are fortunate enough to be doing this stuff in person, you can just ask those questions directly. But oftentimes, even as we're sitting here listening to this podcast, you're going to hear things that are going to probably answer some of the questions that go towards what you're trying to model and what you're trying to learn.
Yeah, that's great. And I appreciate that. I mean, I want to talk about your team a little bit because you obviously, you know, value the team that you work with. How do you go about finding good team members and how do you go about keeping them happy or satisfied as part of the team?
Well, for our business, fortunately and unfortunately, we've had a lot of turnover, at least in the initial first year, because we didn't really know what the heck we were doing. You know, that's one of the big takeaways is like, I'm fortunate to have people come up to me and say, hey, you've really inspired me. You built this business and you've been able to do that in such a short period of time and without the experience. And all of that's great. But the key takeaway here is like, I went and took action. And so we learned a lot by hiring the wrong people. One of the biggest or most important things, I think, when building a team and building a company is understanding, well, what do you want that person to do and who do you want them to be, right? So if you find a person that fits your culture, which you have to know what that is, and what you're trying to build. And they want the job and they're the right fit from a personality standpoint for the job. I mean, you can teach them the nuts and bolts of how to succeed in that role. But if they're not a good cultural fit, you know, if they're the biggest jerk in the world, even if they're the best salesperson, it's going to kill your whole team mentality. Because in our culture in particular, everything we do is all about, hey, how can we improve the lives of others every day? How can we make that client's life better? How can we inspire other people to take the leap into doing whatever they dream about, you know, with the podcast, with the investor mindset? And so for me, I want people who are going to have that same culture. I'm going to want people who are passionate like I am, who are going to, you know, be excited and driven by the energy that I'm going to bring to the table as a leader, and that they're going to naturally bring that same energy themselves. So I've hired people who are probably some of the best salespeople, but they didn't thrive. They didn't succeed in this environment because they weren't a good fit culturally for where we're at. So I'd hire based on culture and personality profile first and job experience second. But when it does come down to sales, you know, you want them to be naturally gifted in sales if that's what you're going to be driving them to do.
Yeah. Well, if you're hiring salespeople, they better sell you on themselves, right?
Truth be told right there.
If they can't do that, then definitely not the person for the job. So I want to kind of wrap up here, but I want to talk about what are some of your favorite books that are inspiring you right now?
Yeah, there's two that jump out. I mean, there's a lot of books that I think are really amazing. There's one called The Go-Giver, and it's a fiction novel, but it's telling this incredible story about giving and contribution. And if you haven't read it, I really recommend it. It's a great audiobook listen if you're an auditory kind of person. But I recommend picking up the book too, because it's nice to thumb through it and get reminded of some of those little nuggets. Another great book on negotiation and sales is called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. And I actually just had Chris Voss's son, Brandon Voss, who is the director of operations, on the podcast recently. So if you're into the book, definitely check that out. What I love about that book in particular is he's an FBI negotiator who takes those same skills from doing hostage negotiations and brings them to the business world. And the big takeaway for me is that, yes, it's amazing and it's incredible to be able to negotiate a deal and get the job done. But what's even more powerful is all of the skills within that book are just communication. It's just understanding what does the other person want? How do you make them feel like what you want is actually great for them and hopefully actually is? And it'll end up improving kind of all your relationships, from romantic to the people that you work with. So those are two books that made a big impact on me.
Awesome. So maybe some final thoughts, things we haven't discussed that you think would be relevant from a investor's mindset perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the investor mindset is really about being willing to look at the other successful people around you and start learning from their success. And so for me, one of the most important things, the one thing I want everyone to take away if they're listening to this podcast episode, is that, you know, get really clear on your purpose. Get really clear on why you're doing what you're doing and what it's going to do for you and for your family, and make that emotional. Make that something that is going to really drive you to get up every day. And then no matter what it is, what limiting belief jumps up in front of you and tries to block your path, you're going to be motivated. You're going to be driven to get around it. And you're not going to be afraid to kind of go after the things that are most important in your life, whether they're we're talking about real estate investing, whether we're talking about stocks, or whether we're talking about, you know, building your family's financial future. Like, if you know why you're doing what you're doing and you're really clear, life's going to be a lot more fun and you're going to get where you want to go.
That's great. No, I really appreciate your input here. And I think this is a great episode. I'm glad we had you on. Where can people find more about you?
So I would definitely check out the Investor Mindset podcast. You know, as soon as you get done with this, go drop a 5-star review on the Money Tree podcast, but then shoot over, go check out the Investor Mindset, hit subscribe, take a listen to a couple episodes. If you love it, do the same for us. You can head to theinvestormindset.com and you can join the Insider Club, which we have a ton of great tips and strategies from the top investors and entrepreneurs on the mindset of success. And we're putting out that content twice a week. So take a listen and check us out. You can always find us on Facebook, Instagram, all the social platforms, The Investor Mindset, or my personal, Stephen Pesavento. So this was awesome. This was a lot of fun.
Hey, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We've had a great run over the last 5 years. We've had lots of great guests over that time. Guests like Joe Saul Sehy, Susie Orman, Art Laffer, Burton Malkiel, Peter Schiff, and more. We've had lots of great content, too. Like what happens when somebody steals $500,000 from you? Tax loopholes for the rich. Investing like a billionaire. Why men and women approach investing differently. How to outlive your money. Tax liens, peer-to-peer lending, asset protection, and more. And we've had lots of great questions from you, our audience, as well. And we really appreciate it. But now we need your help. We want to know what you want to listen to. What topics, guests, and content you value most. This is your chance, Money Tree Podcast listeners. We don't ask frequently, but when we do, the door is wide open for you to give us your thoughts, good, bad, and ugly. What do you want to hear more of? What do you want to hear less of? All this helps to make a better show for you. So many of you have already provided your feedback, and it's going to make an exciting 2019 of great content ahead. We're going to be closing the survey soon, so make sure you leave your feedback now. If having a say in your favorite podcast isn't enough, we're also going to be providing monthly promotions to anyone on our email list. The recent promotion was an overwhelming success. We had lots of positive feedback and input from our listeners. We're going to continue to create great shows for you, and they'll be focused on the content that you suggested. Each month, we're going to have a new promotion. We can't tell you now quite what we have in store for you because we want it to be a surprise, but we know that you're going to be excited. We have some special opportunities that money can't buy. We're excited to bring these to you through the year 2019. But in order to qualify for these promotions, we need to hear from you. In order to qualify, you're going to need to sign up for our email list first. When you do, you're going to have an additional chance to win by completing our Money Tree Podcast survey. Go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to give us your feedback and the additional chance to win. We'll be posting the name of the winner on our website. So if you entered the promotion, please check the website to see that you've won. We also have great shows lined up in the near future with some special guests that you're not going to want to miss. I can't wait to publish these interviews. They're very exciting. So go to moneytreepodcast.com/survey2019 to sign up, and we'll enter you into our monthly promotion. Thanks again for listening, and remember, invest in your life. Now let's move into the panel portion of our show. We're going to be talking about the investor mindset, and we have a great panel today. Today we have Nicole Stoller. How are you doing today, Nicole?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. Really excited. And we also have Michelle Waymire here. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm well, thank you.
Awesome. And of course, we have Mindy Jensen. How you doing, Mindy?
Kirk, I'm doing great today. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys all coming on the show because this is something that I find fascinating when we talk about the investor mindset. You know, it's really easy to take somebody's philosophy, like everybody reads about Warren Buffett, and say, oh, you know, I'm just going to invest like Warren Buffett. But of course, you're not Warren Buffett, and neither am I, and we shouldn't really be investing like him. We should be investing like our own style. And, you know, when we talk about mindset, it's an area that I've certainly not heard too many shows, and one of the reasons I wanted to have Stephen on is because he has a whole show around it. But, you know, the investor mindset's really important. So I guess let's start with Mindy. What prompted you to start investing in real estate?
I'm cheap. And I didn't want to pay rent. So when I bought my very first property, I had been renting and I was like, oh, I'm throwing my money away. So I'm going to buy a property. And I bought, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. So the only thing I could really afford was a very ugly condo. I bought the condo. I made it look really beautiful. And then I met somebody who had a house and we got married. So I sold my condo and I made a $25,000 profit on a purchase price of $50,000. And I thought to myself, well, I want to do that again. So I started investing in live-in flips. I buy very ugly houses. I move into them and I live in the property while I'm rehabbing it so that when I sell it after 2 years, I pay no capital gains taxes. But it all started because I just didn't want to throw my money away on rent anymore.
Well, that's important, right? Because you came in with the mentality like, you know, you didn't want to spend a lot of money. And I think the way you've done it is a highly effective way. I mean, I know some people that are really wealthy. They use exactly that strategy and they're buying big homes, and they're doing that, and then they're flipping it every few years. And I think it's a great strategy. What about you, Nicole? What prompted you to get started investing?
Well, when my husband and I were first married, we really didn't have a lot of money. And I was actually working a second job, which I had my college degree. I was working full time and then working that second job. And my husband was finishing up school and working full time as well. So I was reading a lot of personal finance books. And this was 1998. I came across Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The concepts in that book, which basically Robert Kiyosaki talks about making your money work for you, that the rich find ways to invest in businesses, and real estate is one type of business. That concept I had never been taught. All through college, nobody in my family was an entrepreneur. So it was very eye-opening and extremely appealing to me that I thought we should be doing this too. We can absolutely do this. And that's kind of how we got started.
Nice. Yeah, you know, it's funny that the book Rich Dad keeps coming up over and over on the show, especially shows that are based on real estate. You know, I think he's had a huge, tremendous impact on the investor community because of that book. I know I thought it was great. You can't take any practical use out of it, but it's just from a mindset perspective, it's just a great book. It's simple and to the point. And I think that's really the point where we're talking about with mindset. And what about you, Michelle? What prompted you to get started in investing?
Exciting news in my world. I am actually in the process of buying my very first property. So we are under contract now, fingers and toes all crossed that we don't get any unfortunate surprises. But for me, coming from a world where the vast majority of what I do is portfolio management related, investment related, to me, real estate is not just an opportunity to build wealth, but also to diversify your overall wealth portfolio relative to more traditional methods of investing, like the 401k or the IRA that chances are you might have already going on.
Yeah, that's great. Appreciate that. So Nicole, what about you? So who are your mentors? Like when you're looking to get better at something, or whether it's real estate or what have you, you know, do you model other people in your industry, or who are your mentors as you've gone about your mindset shifts?
I think it's a great question. Our situation is a little bit unique in that back when we did start investing in 1999, we failed actually miserably. And when my husband graduated college, we decided, hey, we need to learn this business. So it's kind of seeking out a mentor. My husband actually went to go work for a very large property management company that managed, you know, 200 to 600 unit apartment complexes. And that's where he got his start and really understanding the operations of the business. So our entire focus for many, many years was around apartment complexes, because that's what he knew. And that was our entire focus. I would say not necessarily a mentor, but I think networking and understanding people in your local market is huge and key. And from networking and meeting different people, we connected with a gentleman that's always been in hotels. So when we were looking to continue growing and buying more properties, we moved from an apartment complex into a hotel because he was sort of a quasi-mentor and helping us understand that business. So we always, ever since those beginning times in 1999, we always try to really understand well before we get into any type of, you know, different real estate investing niche.
So did you have other mentors besides him? Or like, how do you know, like, I want to model this person, like this person is going to be my mentor?
I wouldn't say that there's someone that I model and have as a mentor. I absolutely am always looking to learn other strategies and know what other people are doing. So I will listen to a lot of podcasts. I will spend time, for example, on Bigger Pockets. I will do all of those things, but there isn't necessarily a person that I'm having an ongoing dialogue with. It's more that I'm watching what, because the market's always changing, right? And at times you need to tweak your strategy. So I'm always watching what other people are doing. And there are people that are thought leaders that I'll be watching as a result of that. But it's not like I'm having one-on-one coaching calls with them, as an example.
Well, good. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are potential models or potential mentors out there that, you know, they may not know that you're mentoring them, right? Like, or that they're mentoring you. You just, you know, it's like a Tony Robbins, like he might be a mentor. I think Stephen mentioned this earlier. He doesn't know that he's mentoring me, but, you know, I listen to his tapes and he's indirectly a mentor. So I think that's really important. What about you, Michelle? What are your thoughts on this? Do you model other people in your industry, or who are your mentors?
I actually kind of get the benefit of seeing a lot of different situations simply by virtue of the work that I do. So as a financial planner, I get to learn a lot about how my clients are approaching their diversified income streams. And as a result, I've worked with a number of people who are real estate investors in some capacity or another, whether that's maybe on a slightly larger scale or simply somebody who moves out of their first home and then decides to rent it out rather than necessarily selling it. So it's been really gratifying to kind of watch their progress happen. And it's been really inspiring to see the different ways that regular people with, you know, regular jobs and kind of normal situations can get into real estate investing without necessarily turning their own careers on their head and making this a full-time job. For me, it's something that I've kind of always known. I'd like to dabble in it, but it's not a full-time job for me personally. And so I think it's just really interesting and inspiring to see people who manage to do more than one thing.
So, you know, with yours, you know, you and I are in the same industry. We're both in the wealth management industry. Do you have mentors in our industry that you kind of look up and say, or do you have one person or do you have multiple people?
I would say it's not necessarily looking up to people so much as looking across. So for me, it's really important to network with other financial advisors who serve a similar audience that I do, but might be located in other geographic areas. So some of my closest friends now are advisors and coaches who are throughout the country. And I think it's maybe more of a mutual mentorship in that they're not necessarily teaching me how they're running their practice, but we're able to share best practices with one another in terms of how to make our businesses run more smoothly, as well as how to serve our clients better.
Yeah. And I think that you actually raise a great point, because it's not necessarily a, I guess, a senior-junior relationship, right? It might be a peer, an equal peer relationship, like a mastermind group, for instance. A lot of people do that, where it's, you know, you're all kind of equal peers. You may just be coming at things from a different angle, you know, and I'm certainly a part of a mastermind group and a few other groups that do mentoring, where we all kind of do the same thing. We come at it from a different angle. And sometimes when somebody's having a challenge, from an investing standpoint, it's really hard. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I know that at some points in time, you struggle with it. After the 2008 crisis, a lot of people were shell-shocked. And, you know, it was really hard. You hear all the bad news, and granted, it was bad news, right? I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff going on. But it's hard to kind of take a step back, because everyone was so fearful of it, so they couldn't get out of their own way and look back and say, well, that was a great opportunity to invest. And without getting an outside point of view, sometimes it's hard to remove yourself from your existing mindset to look at things differently. So I think that's a great point.
One thing that I would just add to that is, for some people, I think the task of finding a mentor can seem so daunting, because you assume that you are taking all of their knowledge and information and not giving anything back in return. And for those of us who are givers by nature, that kind of relationship can feel intimidating, like we're not adding value to someone else. And so I love that you mentioned mastermind groups, because that can be a great way to seek mentorship without having to feel like somebody else is just pouring themselves into you.
Yeah. And there are a lot of investor mastermind groups or meetup groups or networks. And there's a lot of different ways you can approach this from an investing standpoint. What about you, Mindy?
I have found a lot of value in the mastermind group. I haven't actually been part of a mastermind group for real estate investing specifically, but for blogging in general and just online presence, Kirk and I were both part of a really amazing mastermind group that I actually had to end up dropping out of, just because I didn't have the time to devote to it. And I wanted somebody else to be able to come in and take my place and really be able to get a lot out of it. It was a great group and I learned so much. And, you know, having that peer-to-peer sharing, you know, there's things that I've done that Kirk has never done. There's things Kirk has done that, you know, Josh never did. And having that mindset, it kind of everybody learns from everybody. And it was really, really helpful. What I do for real estate is I attend a lot of meetups. And of course, I'm at Bigger Pockets all the time. But attending the meetups and you just start talking to people, how do you invest in real estate? And they say things and you're like, oh, I never thought of that. I could totally do that. What a great idea. And it really makes it easy when you're talking to somebody right there face to face. You have all these questions, you can ask them instantly and really just learn so much from their experiences. So the online meetups are definitely fabulous. And, you know, I get a lot out of YouTube. My husband and I do most of the work on our properties ourselves because finding a contractor is difficult. So, you know, when I need to learn something, in the beginning, when I needed to learn something, I went to the library, but then the internet got invented and now there's YouTube. So I can learn how to do pretty much anything on YouTube.
Nice. Thank you, Al Gore, for inventing the internet for that.
Yes, thank you.
And yeah, we definitely lost something when you left the group, Mindy. It was a great group. It's evolved, but it's a great concept. I think we all, as we grow and as we grow older, obviously, you know, we evolve in many ways, and our 20-year-old selves are not the same as our 30 or 40-year-old selves. You know, sometimes there are points in our lives that cause this evolution or this change. I guess I'll ask you, Nicole, was there an inflection point in your career where things just started to go in the right direction? And if so, like, what did you do to make that happen?
So a couple of things. I like how Michelle said, a regular person with a regular job. That's exactly me. I do have a W-2 job as well as the real estate investing. So the two are kind of closely tied together because I made it a point, not only after the failure and then my husband going to work in property management, but I made it a point to say, okay, I have these financial goals. I want to have X amount of net worth. I want to have these kinds of incremental income streams. I won't say passive, but incremental as a result of real estate investing. I want to do these things. And I kind of made for myself like a 10-year plan around that. And I found that really tracking that progress, being focused on that, absolutely, there's going to be bumps. It doesn't always just continue to go up. You know, there's things that happen. But that kind of was an inflection point that then continued to, it's like a flywheel. It just starts going faster and faster and continues to grow. And you also gain more and more confidence, right? So we just put a second hotel under contract as an example that I don't think I would have even thought of that maybe 5 years ago. I'm looking at, you know, buying a small business. I wouldn't have thought of that either, you know, 2 years ago. So these kinds of things, it's like you gain confidence and continue to grow as a result.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's important to visualize where you're going. Were there any challenges in that? Like as you had this inflection point where you're just like, where you made that shift and then you're like, oh, you know, I don't know if I can do this.
Well, a couple of things. The number is daunting, right? Because you're striving for a large goal. So the number is daunting and it does help to break it into small steps, but there's absolutely some drawbacks. You might have challenges with a property. Suddenly, you know, 50 apartments all need air conditioning units replaced, and that's not cheap. And I live in Arizona and you have to do that, right? So now you have a huge setback and you could kind of think, well, okay, this is just not going to work. Well, you have a year that you aren't making a good cash flow from the property as a result, but then you have other years that come that even everything out. So I'd say absolutely there's bumps along the road, but if you take a moment and look back and say, wow, look how far we've come. That gives me the strength to keep going, right? It's just like, oh, well, I thought that was a huge hurdle, but now we've overcome that. So I would say just throughout that process, those ups and downs, looking back has also helped.
What about you, Michelle? Was there an inflection point in your career and what did you do to make that happen?
Yeah. So for me, I would say that there were two pieces. There was the knowledge piece of the inflection point and the action piece. So for me, getting into a business where I was serving investors as well as progressing along my own investment journey, I had this huge fear that I was going to mess something up. Money is so personal. It's about people's lives. It's about people's futures. And that can be really intimidating. And it's easy to start to think, well, I just don't even think I can do this because how could I possibly succeed when I know so little? For me, the big inflection point was I learned about a behavioral bias called the Dunning-Kruger curve. And basically what it says, it's an inverse curve that measures how much we know about something and then our confidence about that topic. Research shows that if you don't know anything at all about a topic, you actually are fairly confident in it because you don't know how much there is to know. And you can look at other people and say, boy, that looks easy. I bet I could do that too. As you start to learn more, what's interesting is that your confidence goes down and down and down. And then you hit a point where you kind of get past this hurdle and you learn still more and your confidence goes back up. So a lot of us, we start our journey kind of in the middle of the Dunning-Kruger curve. We've done all this research. We've started to get our ducks in a row. And as a result, we know enough to know how terrifying it is. And so we don't have a lot of confidence in ourselves. So for me, understanding this is a perfectly normal mental response. This is a documented behavioral bias that I was using to self-sabotage myself. And realizing when I kind of plotted my own journey on that Dunning-Kruger curve, that I knew a lot more than so many other people and that I could still add value to a process and I could still create wealth for myself and others with what I knew. Knowing that as I worked harder and learned more, my confidence would only increase over time. So for me, that was a really big mindset inflection point in making sure that my journey was moving forward.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. Certainly in my practice, when I talk to people, there are people who know enough to be dangerous, as we call it. They know a little bit, but not enough to know really what to do. They don't know enough to be fearful. They don't know enough that the longer I've been doing this, I've been doing this for 20 years as a wealth manager, and the more I know, the more I realize I don't know. Like it's just an endless, I guess, an endless pit of knowledge. Like you can go in any which way, and there's no investor out there who knows everything because it's just such a vast area of knowledge that you can be really good in one area, but you can't be good at everything because it's so complex. We'll put that in the show notes too as a reference because I think that's an important thing if people really want to get to know that more. What about you, Mindy?
Well, I will beg to differ with you. 26-year-old investor Mindy knew everything. You should have called me up because there was no apprehension on my part to jump into real estate investing. Clearly, it worked out the first time, so I'll be able to do it again. I didn't have any fear buying my first property because I knew I didn't want to pay rent. So then obviously buying is the best option. And I should have done more research. You know, looking back now, not 26-year-old Mindy knows for sure that 26-year-old Mindy was an idiot. But, you know, I didn't do much research and I bought a condo instead of a house. And a condo comes with HOA dues, which I didn't realize could go up. And I think month three that I lived there, they doubled because we had to replace boilers and we didn't have any money in the association. Everybody that was living there had to put in like significantly more money. So yeah, I'm pretty much the embodiment of that Dunning-Kruger effect because I absolutely was convinced I knew everything when I was younger. And then as I learned more, I'm like, wow, I didn't know anything. As far as an inflection point, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes ago when you started talking about this. Oh, wow. I really am. Yeah. I don't know that there was any real inflection point. Maybe working at BiggerPockets, maybe about a year after starting at BiggerPockets, I was like, wow, there's a lot more to investing than just live in flipping.
Yeah. I mean, you raise a good point, Mindy, because I know I see this a lot with investors. I mean, we've had pretty much since March of 2009, the market's pretty much gone straight up. So we have a whole generation of investors that do not have any experience with recessions or bear markets or crisis. And a lot of people just think it's easy. We just buy and it goes up, right? It's just like before the real estate market crash, you know, same kind of philosophy. Oh, real estate only goes up, right? And so the longer that goes on, the more people that are just accustomed to that. And everyone looks like a genius, right? Like 26-year-old Mindy was a genius, right? Because you made it happen and you didn't know enough to know, you know, what your mistakes might be. And fortunately, that didn't happen to you, right, Mindy?
26-year-old Mindy didn't lose money and 30-year-old Mindy didn't lose money and older than that, Mindy. So when
we won't go any further than that.
When I bought a house in 2006, of course, like others, I paid top dollar for it, but I bought an ugly house and it needed to be rehabbed. So I did my rehab And I didn't really pay attention to the market because I wasn't looking for a new house. All my money was sunk into this one house. I had projected that I would sell it for $1 million when I got done. And I did not. I sold it for $800,000. So that's $200,000 that I didn't make. Did I lose $200,000? No, because it didn't come out of my pocket. It was never in my pocket. It just wasn't a gain that I completely realized. So, you know, buying smart, even in this current market where everybody is a genius, buying smart is always the best hedge against another downturn. Although really 2008 was such an anomaly. I really don't think that it's going to happen at that capacity again in my lifetime.
Yeah, you raise a good point, Mindy, because any sort of recession or crisis, it's never the same as last time. As I think it was Mark Twain who said, history is never the same, but it does rhyme. And I'm obviously butchering the quote, but you know, effectively that's a common thing, right? Because the real estate market had big problems because it was tied to the banks and the banks fixed a lot of those problems. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen again. It just won't happen like that. Right, Mindy?
Right. And I kind of wish it would, not so that people lose money, but so that I can find more great deals. Right now, there's no great deals to be had, which is the common phrase that I keep hearing. There are obviously great deals to be had. Somebody just sent me an email this morning. Hey, would this work for you? I'm like, yeah, that would be a great property for me to go look at. But it's growing your network. And, you know, that's different than the stock market. I really get the heebie-jeebies with the stock market right now, just because it's been on a tear for so long. I mean, like you said earlier, you know, people who haven't known investing before March of 2009, I look like a genius. My hockey stick growth is amazing. I have a huge return, but you know, that's going to change too. So
yeah, those are all, I think, challenges each one of us have to struggle with as the market is. And I would argue that the eighth or ninth inning of the bull market, we're very close to the end, but you know, it could also last another 5 years, right? None of us really know. You know, all we can do is just protect our risk. So I want to ask about limiting beliefs, because I think this is an important topic as well, as Stephen mentioned on the interview. Nicole, what are your limiting beliefs?
I am going to say that limiting beliefs are about size of the property, like how big and how much can we do, and also how small. This is an interesting, it's maybe not exactly what you were thinking, but we never got started with single family homes. We never did that. And then we just did that within the past 2 years. In fact, we kind of turned our noses at single family homes. But why are we in them? Well, we're in them because the returns are what we expect and what we wanted to see. And we needed to change our strategy because the market changed. Multifamily apartment complexes are very popular, especially in the Phoenix metro area. So the limiting belief is, well, I'm not in that space. It's kind of closing your mind to an opportunity that now I kick myself. Just imagine if I'd bought 100 homes in the Phoenix market when homes were going for like $20,000 a piece in 2011, when no one would touch homes, what that would be worth today. So at least I would say, kind of being open, a limiting belief is that you're in, this is the thing you do. It's kind of back to Mindy's point where going to meetups, talking with people, hearing strategies and being open. The other limiting belief is around larger properties. It's a little bit scary when you're buying, you know, a $6 million property and you think to yourself, ah, there's all these things. The mortgage on that alone is very large every month. But if you've done your numbers correctly, you've built your experience over time, you overcome that limiting belief. But it can be daunting as well. So it's kind of, you know, too large and too small.
What about you, Michelle? What are your limiting beliefs?
My primary limiting belief for a long time was that value is a zero-sum game. I used to think that by charging clients, some of whom are working to get out of debt, some of whom are in financial situations that need a good bit of work, I had all of these anxieties about charging those types of clients. How could I justify that type of price tag for somebody who clearly didn't have the money yet? And I began to realize that when working with people, I was getting paid not just on their current financial situation, but also on my ability to add value to their future. And I want to draw the distinction, or I guess draw the parallel in this case, between that situation and real estate, because I think too, some people might be concerned, especially if you're social justice minded and living in a city that's seeing a lot of turnover and a lot of flipping. One of the things that I think is important to realize is that when you buy a house and you sell it for more money, you're not the only person who captures the value there. The buyer of that property also gets part of the value. And that value might not be financial. It might be in the fact that some people never want to buy a home that needs a lot of work. Some people don't want to be the person to gut a property and put in new fixtures and new appliances and fix the mold, right? If you're the person who can do that work and take on that responsibility, then you're creating value for yourself as an investor, but you're also creating value for people looking to buy in your area as well.
Yeah, that's great. No, I appreciate that. What about you, Mindy?
Well, Nicole and Michelle sound way more polished than I do. I actually am very much still 26-year-old Mindy. And it's so like conceited to say I don't have any limiting beliefs, but like I can convince myself that I can do anything. So that's my limiting belief, is that I think I can do everything. You know, there are things that don't interest me and therefore I don't do them, but I don't really feel like I can't do something.
No, I mean, you're talking about your confidence. And when it comes to limiting beliefs, I think that's a big part of it, right? Is your confidence level in that sort of thing and your interest. I don't want to water ski. It's not that I'm afraid of it. I just don't think I'd enjoy it. Like, it's just not something that's interesting me, right? So you're doing what you want. But I mean, obviously, when you started, you kind of fell into it. But along the way, have you had any limiting beliefs that have kind of said, maybe I should have done this? Like, maybe I don't feel like I want to do it. It's scary. Like, I'm sure you have fears, right?
Oh, yeah, I've got fears. And my fears, I've experienced things that I've decided I don't want to do that anymore. When it comes to rehabbing, I don't do drywall anymore. I would rather hire that out. It's just not worth it to me. But I don't really think it's a limiting belief. I just think that somebody else can do it better. You know what, though? Doing it all myself has been a limiting belief. That's a good way to look at that, because I do almost all the work. Well, my husband and I do almost all the work ourselves on our properties, because hiring a contractor is tough. Is hiring a contractor impossible? No, I could go out there and slog through it and find somebody who's really great and then continue to give them a lot of business. But I don't do that. I would rather do it myself. And am I leaving money on the table because I'm not making profits, you know, on things that I'm not doing? Like, you can only live in one house at a time when you're living flipping. So I could make a lot more money if I were willing to not live in the house. So maybe that's a limiting belief.
Yeah. I mean, each one of us have our own limiting beliefs. It's really individualized for each person, right? Because it comes down to how we're made up, how our brains wired. You know, with some of your fears in the past, Mindy, how have you been able to overcome those? Do you have techniques that you use to overcome some of those fears?
No, I mean, it comes off kind of cocky on this show, but if I don't want to do something, I don't do it. And if I'm like, I can't do plumbing personally. I don't have the arm strength to tighten the connectors tight enough so they don't leak. And that's not really a limiting belief. That's a physical limitation. But then I have a husband who can do it. So like, we don't hire plumbers. We don't hire electricians because his dad was an electrician and he knows how to do all this stuff. So I guess like really just being cheap is kind of a limiting belief.
Yeah. And that can be, for me, it's micromanaging in some ways, not thinking someone else can do it as well as I can. In some ways that's limiting because I'm not outsourcing as easily. What about you, Michelle? How have you been able to overcome some of your limiting beliefs?
Yeah, I think for me, getting to the root of why I'm thinking and feeling a certain way. So I tend to find that my thoughts can really fall into three buckets. So I'm either afraid that something bad will happen, I'm afraid that I need more of something good, or I'm afraid that I'm churning my wheels and kind of putting in more effort than is needed to complete a certain task. And so for me, really kind of picking my own brain, taking the time to unpack those fears and really get to the root of what am I afraid of? What what outcome am I thinking will be the worst case scenario? And then kind of turning it on its head to say, well, what's the best case scenario? What's the best thing that could come out of this situation? And instead of focusing on some of the negative aspects, trying to turn my attention to some of the more positive aspects.
Great. Well, thank you for that, Michelle. What about you, Nicole? What are some ways you've been able to get over your limiting beliefs?
This is going to sound really geeky. I work in IT, I work in tech. So the way that I overcome those is I create a plan. I love process and methodology and breaking down the goal or the thing I think I can't achieve into all the little steps. I love tracking numbers and metrics and looking at data. And then it's almost like I can take the emotion out of it and I can just focus on, okay, these are the things I'm going to do, you know, each day to achieve whatever that is. That has really worked for me very well, really in both my W-2 career as well as in real estate. So it's taking that like a IT project management, and I geek out over spreadsheets and numbers.
There's nothing wrong with that, Nicole. That's not how I'm wired, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I'm wired almost the opposite. But for some people, they need that. They need the data. They need to really kind of dig into the details to make it work. I'm wired the opposite, where I get burnt out if I start focusing too much on that kind of process and workflow. So I think it's great that you found a way to work for you. Have you had any other things besides that, that have any other techniques you've used to kind of get over fears or limiting beliefs?
I do like to read quite a bit of, you know, kind of productivity and overcoming your fears type of books. I like to read motivational books, and I will focus on that a little bit every day. Also, it's just kind of this forging ahead. If you get too bogged down, and I deal with this again in my W-2 job, something doesn't go right and it's extremely frustrating. It's going to be, you know, a large impact, but kind of breaking it down, focusing, thinking in the morning about how I'm going to overcome that and continuing to push ahead. Those are really the only ways that I've been able to overcome those.
Yeah, I know for me, and it starts with mindfulness. It's really just kind of being aware of your strengths and weaknesses, which I think is a struggle for a lot of people. You know, for me, you know, as an investor, as a wealth manager for clients, you know, I have to be mindful of how I'm thinking about things versus how the client's perspective is. You know, so for me, I've had struggles trying to model or mimic other investors, other, you know, successful investors. And at some point you realize that, like, you just can't do it like them. And, you know, a number of years back, I had, you know, this epiphany that, like, I need to find a way that works best for me. And my methodology has been very different, but what I found works really well for my investor psychology. And some traditional ways of handling things like risk management, or, you know, might be like putting on stop losses. And for various reasons, that doesn't work for me. So I had to find a solution around that. So I always consider, like, starting with a limiting belief, like, start with mindfulness of just understanding yourself well, like understanding where your head is, how you're thinking about things, where your mind is going. And it sounds a little woo-woo, but it's really just taking the time to understand yourself and what your strengths and weaknesses are, because that's really important, because we're not Warren Buffett. I'm not Warren Buffett. I don't invest like him because my style is different from his. He's very successful because he's effectively found a style that works for him. You know, he talks a lot about in his youth where he wanted to get as far away from Wall Street as possible because he was afraid it would influence his thinking. And that's important. It's important to understand that about yourself, that you could easily get wrapped up in the, you know, in the energy of Wall Street and not be able to use the style that works for you. I also want to mention something that you guys were talking about, which is, I guess I would call it like a fixed versus a growth mindset, which is similar to kind of like the and or philosophy. I think, Michelle, you had mentioned about the zero sum game. Our industry is very much a zero sum game in many ways, but I always used to look at it as like an or, like it either needs to be this or it needs to be that. There are really two choices, which kind of gets into the fixed mindset. Like, somebody told me there are two choices, so that's what I'm going with. Those are the ones I'm going to think about. And what I realized a number of years back is you don't have two choices. You have a million choices. and you don't have to choose what everyone else is talking about. You know, come up with your own. It's more of an and. Maybe you can do both of those things. Maybe it's not an or, you know, a binary decision. Maybe there's an and. Maybe you can do both of them. Or maybe it's a third or fourth option. But it's really just kind of understanding that, you know, not to get stuck in this fixed mindset of it has to be this way. I think it's important as we talk about limiting beliefs and mindset to understand that we're not limited by the choices put in front of us. We're limited by the choices that we give ourselves. I want to wrap this up in the interest of time here. Nicole, where can people find more about you?
Probably a great place to go is my website. I host a podcast for people in technology, encouraging them to invest in real estate, buy small businesses, all the things that I've done throughout the years as well. That website is therichergeek.com, and the podcast is all the places where you would find a podcast.
Great. Thanks. What about you, Michelle?
You can read more about my work as a financial advisor and financial coach at youngandscrappy.com, young A-N-D Scrappy. I'm also the host of the Young Scrappy Money podcast, which is all over all of the podcast places.
Nice. By the way, I love the name Scrappy. Like that's real catchy. Like it gets your attention right
away. Thank you.
And what about you, Mindy?
I am the community manager at BiggerPockets.com. So if you need to find me, I am all over BiggerPockets. And I am the co-host of the BiggerPockets Money podcast, which is also everywhere podcasts are found.
Great. Well, thank you all for coming on the show. I think this is great. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about this. I know the listeners really get something out of this show because mindset's really important. My name's Kirk Chisholm. I'm a wealth manager at Innovative Advisor Group. We don't just manage your wealth. We make your life better. You can find out more about me at innovativewealth.com. So thank you for joining us this week on the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can also check out our show at moneytreepodcast.com. On our website, you'll have access to all our resources, show notes, and archive shows. Lastly, please leave a show rating or comments on the podcast app of your choice. When you subscribe and rate to the show, it allows us to get access to some of the top guests that you're going to want to hear. So have a great week ahead. And remember, no one will care about your money like you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.